A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 3, verses 41 to 55, Liberation from the Illusory Energy. Verse 41. Shirajo vacha karma yogam vadattana purusho yena sanskita vituyeha shikarmani naishkamyam vidate param. Translation. King Nimi said, O great sages, please speak to us about the process of karma yoga. Purified by this process of dedicating one's practical work to the Supreme, a person can very quickly free himself from all material activities, even in this life, and thus enjoy pure life on the transcendental platform. Mukamma karoti vachala mangalam kayate girin yakupanta maham vande shi purum jinatayanam Om jnana timirandasya gyananjara sharakaya chakshiranitam yena tasame shi gurayanam. So before we begin, we have a little announcement for those of you who are taking the exam. You should, I think Kalpit doesn't know this, but the rest of you know it, that you all have to write 2 to 3 questions for each chapter and hand it in. Mitra will be collecting the questions, and as soon as you hand in your questions, you will get the question bank, which is, Lila Shuka has finished his questions, so he'll get the full question bank. As you hand your questions in, you will get that much of the question bank to study for your exam. Okay, so now let us review what Burijan was teaching you. We'll review the questions. The first question was, what is the highest good? So what is the highest good? Devotional service. Very good. Devotional service. What are the religious principles, natural proclivities, behavior, speech, what are the symptoms, in other words, of an uttama adhikari? Yes? Sees Krishna in everything and everything in Krishna. Nothing, what else?
Nothing can lure him,
yes. What are some other symptoms of an uttama adhikari? He's always satisfied, yes. He's always satisfied, yes.
He sees everyone as a better servant of Krishna than himself.
He sees everyone as?
A better servant
of Krishna than himself. Yes, he sees everyone as Sri Krishna except me. Yes.
He feels no need for preaching because he sees that everybody is engaged in Krishna's service. I mean, everybody like...
Right, he sees no need for preaching because everyone's a devotee. He's just forgotten, but they're still better devotees than he is. Who was the example of the best uttama that we were talking about? Prabhupada gave the example of the best. He didn't give Yashoda, no. Radharani. Said Radharani, she brings everyone and says, this is a better devotee than I am. So the best uttama is Radharani. Of course, Prabhupada also is uttama adhikari. Okay, what about madhyama adhikari? What are the symptoms of a madhyama? Yes?
Loves God.
Loves God.
Friendly with the bullies.
Friendly with the bullies.
Attachment to those who are less qualified or ignorant.
Yeah.
And he's indifferent to those who are inimical.
Indifferent to those who are inimical, yes. Anything else about the madhyama? Yes.
He understands the presence of Krishna in everyone's heart and therefore respects everyone, but his knowledge is on the basis of the Shastra.
His knowledge is the basis on the Shastra. Uttam actually sees Krishna in everyone's heart. Madhyama understands. Yes. Krishna Mai?
He's a Shradhavan.
He what? Shradhavan. Okay. He's a preacher. Yes?
He's halfway in between. Yeah, because the Kanishtha
Kanishtha might have to struggle because he's more into Maya.
Madhyama.
Madhyama. The Madhyama is him, yeah. Okay. Yes, Parvati?
He discriminates.
Yes. Yeah.
Constantly chanting
the holy name. Very high level of Madhyamadhikari. Constantly chanting, Nirantara.
With faith,
with devotion. Okay, what about the Kanishta Adhikari? Yes?
He worships the Lord, but not other devotees and other living entities.
Yes, he has faith in deity worship, he worships the Lord, but he does not respect so much other devotees and other living entities. He may criticize, he may see problems there. Yes. Anything else about the Kanishta? Huh? Yeah.
Faith can easily be shaken. Understanding is not as strong.
Right. So we have, okay, next question. This was Virjan's class. What is the external energy of Vishnu, Maya? I'm sure he gave you a very nice class on what is Maya. Yes.
Destroys everything.
Yes.
Illusion, which is not true.
Huh?
Illusion.
It's not true. Yes. What is not true? What is it that's not true? Okay, Maya's illusion. What's the illusion? Yes?
We are enjoyers.
Yeah. There is something to enjoy here. That's the illusion. That you can get happiness from enjoying the material nature. That is illusion. That is the illusion. What else? What else is the illusion? Yes.
Krishna is not here.
Yes. Krishna, independent, yes.
It has
two purposes.
Sense gratification and liberation.
Oh, very good. I never heard the liberation part. but that's good news. That you can also get liberation. How can you get liberation then? Well, that must be the next question. How can one become disassociated from this Maya? Yes?
Surrender
to the spiritual master. Very good. Oh, and I found one interesting, very interesting about the Lord Brahma. Did he read that purport about the different kinds of Brahma? What are the different, four different kinds of Lord Brahma? One's a devotee, we have a devotee. And what are the other three kinds? Yes. Yeah, Karmi. How could a Karmi become Brahma? How does that happen? I guess that wasn't discussed. How can a Karmi become Brahma?
Isn't it that if one follows the principles of Varnashram Dharma for 100
years? Yes, if you're perfect in Varnashram, you get elevated to the planet of Brahma. And you can become, if you're the most exalted in the universe, you become Brahma. And we have the Karmi, and we have a devotee, a great devotee, pure devotee. Who else can become Brahma?
Gyani,
very good, the most exalted Gyani. And the one more category. There's one more, five, okay. I have another one here. Supreme Lord. I didn't see him in the purport, but that's true. It's true that if there is nobody qualified, then the Lord takes that post. Any of the post. And who else?
A yogi.
It's a devotee who is mixed, who feels like he's an independent creator. That's the fourth type here. It's given in the purport. He thinks himself independent of or equal to the Lord. So he goes to Mahavishnu's abode, and the Jnani gets impersonal liberation, the Karmi comes back, and the devotee goes back to Godhead. So there are different kinds of Brahma, and they have different destinations as well. So,
which verse is this?
This is a purport of verse 12. 11:3-12. Talking about when Brahma leaves his body. The purport is really interesting. That's why I wanted to repeat it again, because sometimes that question may come up. Somebody may ask you, where does Brahma go? And then you have to say, it depends what kind of Brahma there is. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays, I would rather be an insect than a devotee insect than a non-devotee Brahma. One of his prayers, he said, let me be an insect who in the house of a devotee rather than a Brahma who is not a devotee. So he mentions that too in his prayers. Manasa Deho Geho. Okay, how to become dissociated, surrender to the spiritual master. A very famous verse that you're going to have to know. Tasmad gurum prapadeta jigyasu shreya uttamam. Shabde parichanishnatam brahma shama shaya. I think I have something interesting.
What's the number?
21. That's verse 21. And that verse is often quoted by Srila Prabhupada, and it's the qualification of the spiritual master. And I have a quote from Madhya Lila that is interesting. The spiritual master should study the disciple's inquisitiveness for no less than 6 months or a year. So when we were with Srila Prabhupada, we only had to stay for 6 months. If we could just follow the regular principles and stay in the temple for 6 months, we would get initiation. But now I think it's different, right? How long does Burijan Prabhu take? Many years. I know some people waiting for so many years already.
5 years.
Radhanath Swami, like 5 years, 7 years. So now it's like they're being very careful. Which is good. Which is good. Prabhupada was, he just, because in those days, anybody who could follow the four regulative principles and stay in the temple, that was a very high level of devotional service. You know, yes. So what else do I have? Yes. There's a beautiful lecture on Bhagavad Gita 2.13. Where Prabhupada quotes this verse, and he says, he quotes, Shabde pare chanish natam. And he has a wonderful translation for that. I think in the verse it says that you are, let's see, you know this, he has realized conclusions of the scriptures by deliberation and is able to convince others. He's realized the conclusion. Prabhupada said, Shabde pare chanish natam means, one who has taken complete bath in the ocean of the Vedic literature. So that is a spiritual master. He's always having his bath in the Vedas, or Srimad Bhagavatam, or Bhagavad Gita. That's his bath every day, Gita Bhagavatam. So I thought that was a really nice thing. Okay, so that is how one can be disassociated from Maya. And then I found another interesting verse, verse 32, I thought it struck me. On Vrijan Prabhu's verses. That was very similar to the one about chanting. You cry, you laugh, you feel pleasure, you speak out loud. And this reminded me of Prahlad Maharaj, who was also like that. And so next question, what is the true identity of Brahman? That was the last question that Vrijan Prabhu discussed. Brahman. Yes? Jiva Tattva. It's part of Brahman. Okay. Anybody else remember anything from Burija? Yes, or from Brahman?
This explanation of Upalayana follows this Vedantic template of five steps of presenting Vishaya, Samshaya, Vakshya, Siddhanta, and Sangata.
That was in the purport, yeah?
Yeah, that's purport. From Pakistan. So the Vishaya is that Brahman is supreme absolute truth, is all pervading in all states of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
The doubt is that one cannot know or describe him.
Mm.
And the Purvapaksha is that everything that we see is Brahman. And Siddhanta is that spirit is unborn and unchanging. And the reconciliation of everything is the work of service.
Jai. Thank you. That wasn't in the purport, but that's very nice. We should know. We should know all these things. Yes, this is Vedanta. We are studying Vedanta. Essence of Vedanta is Srimad Bhagavatam. So now the next question is about karma. Karma, akarma, vikarma. Purified by this process of dedicating one's practical work to the Supreme, a person can very quickly free himself from all material activities, even in this life, and thus enjoy pure life on the transcendental platform. Sounds to me like King Nimi is almost answering his own question. In some respect, he's glorifying karma yoga. He's glorifying naishkarmya, the devotional service. So we'll go to the end of the purport of 41. By the words, tasmad gurum prabhadyeta jigyasusheya uttamam, this chapter has clearly explained that dovetailing one's work with the service of the Lord is an art one should learn at the lotus feet of the bona fide spiritual master. Otherwise, if one whimsically declares his materialistic work to be transcendental devotional service, there will be no actual result. Therefore, according to Śrīla Jīva Gosvāmī, one should not mistake the word naishkāryam to indicate inactivity. Rather, it indicates transcendental activity under the guidance of the Lord and his representative. So this is already, we're hearing one difference between what work, how dovetailing your work. Karma yoga means it's under the direction of the spiritual master. You can't just say, okay, I'm like in India, a lot of people say, they quote Bhagavad Gita 2:47, karma nivadikara stay. Yes, I'm following Krishna, I am supporting my family. Karma, and you have a right to do your duty. But the second line, give the fruits to Krishna, ma phaleshu karachana, that they forget. They keep the fruits for their family. And they're saying, yes, my work is transcendental devotional service. This is my seva to my family. But that's not what Krishna says. He says, give me the fruits. Give me the fruits of your work. So this is karma yoga. That's why you need a spiritual master. So many people read Bhagavad Gita, and they come up with their own ideas of what is karma yoga and how they should do karma yoga. But actually, surrender, if you surrender to the spiritual master, then you find out what is real karma yoga and how you can actually connect to Krishna. Now, verse 42. Once in the past, in the presence of my father, Maharaj Ikshvaku, I placed a similar question before four great sages who were sons of Lord Brahma, but they did not answer my question. Please explain the reason for this. Purport. According to Śrīla Śrīla Swāmī, the words Brahmana Putra, sons of Brahma, refer to four Kumaras headed by Sanak Rishi. Śrīmad Vācharya has quoted a verse from Tantra Bhāgavata stating, the reason the four sons of Lord Brahma, although Mahajans and experts in the science of devotional service, declined to answer King Nimi, was they wanted to demonstrate clearly, even those who are expert in cultivation of speculative knowledge cannot understand the actual science of pure devotional service. So according to the opinion of Sridhar Swami, they didn't answer because they wanted to give an example that we are expert, we are jnanis, so we don't understand this. We are jnanis, we four kumaras, we are jnanis, so we cannot answer this question. That was one reason that Sridhar Swami, and Sridhar Jiva Goswami has another reason. He said the sages avoided answering the question from the king because at that time King Nimi was a young boy and therefore not mature enough to understand the answer fully. So two reasons why they did not answer him. So sometimes you ask a question to a devotee and he may not give you an answer, or he may not give you the answer you're thinking you're going to get. And Prabhupada was always like that. As Shruti Kirti Prabhu was saying, you never know what answer Prabhupada is going to give, and he may give opposite answers at different times to the same thing. So we don't know exactly what is the purpose of the pure devotee. Very difficult to understand pure devotee. So verse 43, Sri Avirhocha replied, prescribed duties, non-performance of such duties, and forbidden activities are topics one can properly understand through authorized study of the Vedic literature. This difficult subject matter can never be understood by mundane speculation. The authorized Vedic literature is a sound incarnation of personality of Godhead himself. Thus, Vedic knowledge is perfect. Even the greatest learned scholars are bewildered in their attempts to understand the science of action if they neglect the authority of Vedic knowledge. So interesting, here we have karma, akarma, vikarma. But according to the purport, the meanings are a little different from Bhagavad Gita. Prescribed duties authorized by revealed scripture are called karma. Okay, we have that understanding, karma kanda. Failure to execute one's highest duty is called akarma. So it's a different, it's a little different from how we understand Bhagavad Gita. When we hear about akarma, we think, oh, that's naishkarma, that's devotional service. So that's, we don't want to get confused here. So what they call devotional service in these verses is naishkarma. Naishkarma. It's a different name. So therefore, we don't want to get confused here. The performance of forbidden activities is called vikarma. So vikarma is the same, karma is the same. Akarma has a little different meaning here. And he will talk about devotional service, which he puts in even a higher category than karma, akarma, and vikarma. And so it's, we have to understand this terminology here. It's a little bit different, but don't get confused. So then again, at the end of the purport of 43, the four sons of Brahma declined to answer the question of King Nimi, since at that time the king was a mere child and therefore not capable of seriously surrendering to the process of hearing through a disciplic succession. And so he couldn't really surrender at that age, because children change when they become teenagers. Who knows what he'll... Of course, in those days they didn't change. But in these days, after you become a teenager, everything changes, even if you're born in a devotee family. So they said he could not really understand what it means to surrender, because what it means to understand, you have to surrender. You have to surrender to hear properly. Srila Madhvacharya has pointed out in this regard, Isharat vat vad, Ishara vishayat vat. Because the Vedas describe the unlimited personality of Godhead, Vedic knowledge cannot be approached by mundane methods of comprehension. So what are these mundane methods of comprehension? You just, it's just by rote. You do it by rote, and you don't, or they, you may chant it, but you don't follow it. The Vedas are nice, they're very nice, but as long as, but we don't have to follow them. Of course, in the previous ages, they did follow the Vedas. But now it's more like a museum piece. People don't really study the Vedas so much, or follow, they don't follow them. They don't know how to follow them, because they don't follow, surrender to a spiritual master. So this verse is also very similar to Bhagavad Gita, fourth chapter. The intricacies of action and forbidden action are very difficult to understand. Very difficult. So there's a few verses in fourth chapter like that. Who can understand this? Very difficult. But to understand, you have to study the Vedas. So we study Bhagavad Gita and we understand. And we follow Srila Prabhupada and we understand immediately. He just told us that you're an artist and you paint for Krishna. If you know how to type, you type for Krishna. So I knew how to type, so I type for Krishna. And we were in Boston, we were doing composing, typesetting, layout, typesetting and layout for the book. And we were doing Bhagavad Gita as it is, the first one, the big expanded one, Macmillan version. So we had this machine, a composing machine, in the basement of the building where we lived in Boston. And Prabhupada said, this machine has to go 24 hours a day. And some of us were doing it during japa. And he says, when you're typing, you're doing japa. He told us, when you're typing on that machine, it's the same as japa. And so we didn't feel bad missing our japa. Of course, we did. We still chanted our japa. But during japa time, you know, typing on this machine, it was antique. I mean, in those days, it was the latest model. But there were no computers. So it was like this huge machine, like big as me. And then you have to, you type one line, then you look at the machine, and it says a number and a letter, like C4. Then you type it at the end of the line. Then you go to the next line, you type it, you look at the machine, it says, okay, D2, then you type D2. So then they give you photographic paper, the final, then you, on the photographic paper, we were transliterating the verses on photographic paper, and we had to transliterate, and then we had to, before each line, we look at the number and we go, okay, D2, set the dial, D2, and then we type the line. Then C4, type the line, then it would come straight. That was typesetting in 1970. Typesetting. And then if we make a mistake, then the layout people come and they circle the words, and then we have to retype the word. Any mistake we made, we had to retype, and they would cut and they would paste it on the photographic paper. That was cut and paste. It was really cut and paste. They pasted it on. And layout was layout. It was all over the floor. It was layout. It was really out. like we had all pages all over the floor layout. You know, now you don't understand these words. They use the same words, but it's completely different idea. Layout, you don't lay out and you don't cut and paste, really. I mean, kind of cut and paste, but not, it was literally cut and paste and layout. But that was dovetailing, and some of us, like I had the talent of typing, but some of them didn't know. But Prabhupada said, okay, you have to do the binding, you have to do this, you have to run the press. So we were dovetailing, but at the same time, we were doing the needful. And Prabhupada would tell us, you do this, you do that. Even if we didn't know how to do it, we thought, oh, okay, well, if Prabhupada thinks I can do it, then I can do it. So we would just do it, whatever he asked us to do. So Prabhupada, he dovetailed what we knew how to do, and he dovetailed us in things we didn't even know how to do, too. So he would just dovetail us however he wanted to dovetail us. But we just followed him. We had Guru Nishtha, and therefore we got the result. We're still here today, somehow or other. Okay, so, verse 44, we're going to hear about Vikarma. Childish and foolish people are attached to materialistic fruitive activities, although the actual goal of life is to become free from such activities. Therefore, the Vedic injunctions indirectly lead one to the path of ultimate liberation by first prescribing fruitive religious activities. Just as a father promises his child candy, so the child will take his medicine. So first we hear about these people who are doing Vikarma. They're attached. They're attached. And they don't know they're supposed to become free. So, because they're doing Vikarma, therefore, the Vedas give them, they want to elevate them to karma. So therefore, there's the Vedic injunctions. Indirectly. They don't tell them, you know, if you follow this, then you will get liberation. No, no. Because they don't want liberation. I've heard people say, I don't want liberation. I want to go to Swarga. I want to come back here and be with my family. You know, they don't want liberation. So the Vedas don't tell them. They say, you will go to, you will enjoy in the heavenly planets. You will, and many religions also tell them that. In the Muslim religion, the Christian, you will enjoy. You will go to a heavenly place and you will enjoy. So the Vedas are the same. Yes, you will do this sacrifice and you will enjoy. So therefore, that's why the Vedas are important. They give karma. They give you some way to do karma in a regulated way. So Sridhar Swami comments on this indirectly. The Sanskrit word parokshavada means concealment of the real nature of something by claiming it's something different than what it really is. So the Vedas are actually concealing their purpose. That's why you can't find Krishna. It's very difficult to find Krishna in the Vedas. Real purpose of Vedas is to know Krishna. Real purpose of the Vedas is liberation, know Krishna, but it's concealed. So we'll go to paragraph 2. If a father tells his child, you must take this medicine by my order, the child may become fearful and rebellious and reject the medicine. Therefore, the father entices his child by saying, I'm going to give you a delicious piece of candy. But if you want this candy, first take this little bit of medicine, then you can have the candy. Such indirect persuasion is called parokshavada, or an indirect description that conceals the actual purpose. The father presents his proposal to the child as if the ultimate goal were to receive the candy, and only a minor condition must be fulfilled to receive it. Actually, however, the father's goal is to administer the medicine to the child and cure him of his disease. So describing the primary purpose indirectly and concealing it with a secondary proposal is called parokshavada, or indirect persuasion. Since the great majority of conditioned souls are addicted to sense gratification, pravatir esha bhutanam, the Vedic Karmakanda rituals offer them a chance to become free from temporary material sense gratification by making them greedy for fruitive Vedic results, such as promotion to heaven or powerful ruling position on earth. In all Vedic rituals, Vishnu is worshipped. Thus, one is gradually promoted to the understanding one's actual self-interest is to surrender to Vishnu. So that's the medicine. You just worship Vishnu and do the sacrifice, and you will get your candy. Natevi dusartha gatimhi Vishnu. They don't know the goal is Vishnu. Such an indirect method is prescribed for balanam, those who are childish or foolish. An intelligent person can immediately understand by a direct analysis the actual purpose of Vedic literatures described by the Lord Himself, Vidaischa Savairaham Eva Vidya. All Vedic knowledge ultimately aims at achieving shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we'll go to the last paragraph of the purport in, after the quote. Kali Yuga is an ocean of hypocrisy and pollution. In Kali Yuga, all natural elements are polluted, like water, earth, sky, mind, intelligence, and ego, and even milk. When Prabhupada was here, there were in America, we had milk that put fish oil in the milk. That's vitamin D or something. And they asked Prabhupada what to do. He said, well, you offer this milk. It's all you have. So it was, you know, what can we do? Vitamin. Now it's different. Now it's different. Now it's buffalo, right. You don't need vitamin D, you just drink buffalo milk. It's much more powerful than vitamin D, I'm sure. Yeah, you can't, even in India, it's always difficult to get milk somehow. We couldn't get milk when we were in Calcutta in 1972. There was no milk available, even buffalo. Nothing was there, no milk, no ghee. They were bringing ghee from Australia. In 1974, we got ghee. Somehow Gargamuni got all of it. And he was our temple president, so that was helpful. Gargamuni got all the ghee, and he wanted to sell it, I think. Something. But somehow we had ghee. Not for 2 years. But yeah, everything is so polluted. Even Vrindavan is very difficult to breathe sometimes. Water is polluted, earth, sky, mind. When I fly over Delhi, it's just like a haze. For a long way it goes. Over the big cities you see this haze, and you know it's just pollution. It's pollution. So, the only auspicious aspect of this fallen age is the process of chanting the holy names of the Lord, Astiheko Mahankuna. Simply by the delightful process of Krishna Kirtan, one is freed from his connection to this fallen age, Mukta Sangha, and goes back to Godhead, Pranam Vijay. We'll hear that verse tomorrow. Krishna Varnam Tusha Krishnam. It's in chapter 5. Sometimes the preachers of the Krishna conscious movement also use paroksha, or indirect method of persuasion, offering a nice transcendental sweet to the conditioned soul to entice him to come to the lotus feet of the Lord. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is kevala anandakanda, simply blissful. But by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even one who is indirectly attracted to the Krishna conscious movement achieves very quickly the perfection of life and goes back to Godhead. Yes, I think sometimes devotees, they give sweets or they give other things just to bring people. I know how I came. I saw an ad in the newspaper, Love Feast. I said, wow, Love Feast, what is that? And I went and I found out it's a lot more than what you imagine. Just a small little ad, Love Feast. So that was an enticement, Love Feast. Love is good, so let's go and see what is this Love Feast. That was the enticement. And then when you get there, wow, it's completely something else, out of this world. So Narada Muni, he would also preach indirectly. He would use different methods of preaching, indirect preaching. The way he was preaching to the sons of Daksha, the first batch, he told an analogy, and they understood. The second batch, he just said, follow your brothers. You're attached to your brothers, just follow them. So Narada Muni, he had a lot of different kind of preaching techniques. The hunter, he just said, he told that hunter, just don't half-kill the animals. I mean, that wasn't the goal of life. But he said, don't half-kill. Kill them completely. And so, is that the goal of life, to kill the animals completely? No, but he was preaching indirectly to that hunter. It's parokshavada. It's not the direct devotional service. It wasn't until he actually surrendered, then he said, okay, break your bow. Now break your bow. When he surrendered, then he gave him the full instruction. So end of Bhagavad Gita is surrender, so Bhagavatam we get the full instruction. of Krishna. Yes, now you're surrendered, now you are ready to hear Paramahansa Sangita. Yes, so with Narada Muni, if you study all his preaching techniques, quite amazing. Different ways he would preach. Prachana Bharhi, he showed him all the dead animals, and these are all the animals you killed. So think about what you're doing, all these sacrifices. So let's see. I have something here. Oh, that's verse 45. Here's Shrita Swami says, here someone may object. Is it not true that if liberation were the real goal of life, then the speaker here would first have rejected all fruit of work? So in answer, we get verse 45. If an ignorant person who has not conquered the material senses does not adhere to the Vedic injunction, certainly he will engage in sinful and irreligious activities. Thus his reward will be repeated birth and death. So now this is talking about the person who does vikarma. If the vikarma person does not engage in karma, then he will get mrityor, what is this? Mrityor mrityum. He will get death after death, not birth after birth. Death after, another way of looking at it. We say birth after birth. Here it says he will get death after death. Death after death. Another way of looking at it. It makes you more sober if you think it's not birth. It's death after death, not birth after birth. It's death after death in this world. And death is very painful. So this is the result of vikarma. Death after death. Karma, the result of karma is you will be elevated. You will be taking your medicine, and so eventually you'll come to pure devotional service. So this purport, in the previous verse, it was stated, although fruitive activities are prescribed in the Vedas, the actual goal of human life is to free oneself from all materialistic activities. Therefore, one may conclude there is no need to perform the Vedic rituals, which offer regulated sense gratification. But an ignorant person, in other words, one who has not understood he's not the material body, but an eternal spiritual soul, part and parcel of Krishna, will invariably be unable to control the urges of the material senses. Therefore, such a materially inclined person neglects the Vedic injunctions that administer regulated sense gratification, he will surely fall down into unregulated sense gratification and papa, or sinful life. For example, those who are affected by sexual desire are ordered to accept vivaha yagya, or religious marriage ceremony. We often see that because of false pride, a so-called brahmachari or celibate student of Vedic knowledge rejects the marriage ceremony as maya, or material illusion. But if such a celibate student is unable to control his senses, he'll undoubtedly degrade himself by eventually engaging in illicit sex, which has no connection to Vedic culture. Yes. This is a fact. There was one devotee here in Vrindavan who was telling me, you know, you should not speak Bhagavatam. It's not Vedic. Then this person, he went and he started living with a lady here in Vrindavan without getting married. So if you say something is not Vedic, but then you start, you know, but that's obviously Vedic, I guess, to live with some woman. Everybody has their conception of Vedic. According to what we rationalize according to our own, what we would like to take from the Vedic culture, and what we would like to reject from the Vedic culture. Similarly, a neophyte in Krishna consciousness is encouraged to eat Krishna prasadam to his full satisfaction. Sometimes an immature practitioner of bhakti yoga tries to make a show of severe eating habits and eventually falls down into eating unregulated and abominable foodstuffs. It's interesting because this purport is written by Hridayananda Maharaj, and he has a memory of Srila Prabhupada, where one day he heard Prabhupada say, you should control your eating, and so he decided, okay, I'm not going to eat much. I'm just going to take very, very little. So he was there, Prabhupada was there, and he was, you know, following his, you know, restricted eating program. And then there was some leftover prasadam, potatoes on a plate, and Prabhupada saw it, and he pointed to the plate and he said, you eat that. So then that was the end of his program of restricting his prasadam. This is a nice story. Prabhupada would always catch you. I think Shutakirti also tried that one time. He just started following a restricted diet because he was sleeping too much, and then because he was sleeping too, oh, it was Pradumna, yeah. Pradyumna, Prabhupada's Sanskrit editor, and then he was starting to get really thin, and Prabhupada called him in. He says, "Why are you so thin?" He says, "Well, you know, Prabhupada, you know, I'm just, you know, I sleep too much." He says, "No, you have to eat. As much as you can digest, you should eat. And so if you can digest 10 chapatis, then you can eat 10 chapatis. But if you cannot digest 10 and you eat, if you can only digest 2 and you eat 4, then that's overeating. That was, oh yeah, that little boy. Prabhupada was giving a class on this, Yukta Hara Viharasya, Yukta Chestasya, at the Bhagavad Gita 6th chapter, one who restricts his, one who is regulated in eating, sleeping, working, and recreation, he can mitigate all pains. So a little 8-year-old boy raised his hand, "Prabhupada, you said we should regulate our eating." Prabhupada said, "No, not you. For a child, overeating mistake is very good." He said, "But for an old man, undereating mistake is very good." And then the kid says, "What about Tamal?" Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Prabhupada said, "No, he cannot overeat." Kids are pretty smart sometimes. So yeah, we have to, yeah. According to Śrīla Viśnāda Chakravarti Thakura, the words mrityor mrityum apaiti mean that a sinful person is awarded a free ticket to hell by the Lord of Death himself, Yamaraj. Oh, wonderful. So they will get a free ticket by Yamaraj to hell. This is described in the Vedas as follows. Mitva punar mityum apadyate adyamana svakarmapi. Persons who cause themselves severe pain by their materialistic activities gain no relief at the moment of death, for they are placed again in a situation in which death will occur. Therefore, Vedic ritualistic activities such as the wedding ceremony or relishing of sumptuous yagyashista or food remnants of sacrifice should not be given up by those whose senses are not yet controlled. The previous verse gave the example of a father's administering candy to his son to induce a child to take medicine. If the child rejects the father's offer, thinking the candy is unnecessary, the child also misses the opportunity to take the medicine that will cure him. Similarly, if a materialistic person rejects the Vedic injunctions that administer prescribed sense gratification, he will not be purified, but instead will be further degraded. Sri Jiva Goswami has described a materialistic person as one whose mind and intelligence are not faithfully fixed in the message of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, comment by... from Jiva Goswami's Mokisundara, but by working, I guess this is also Sridhar Swami, working in defiance of the Vedic injunctions, vikarmana, a person attains death after death, and he attains tortures as painful as dying. However, by somehow renouncing all work, one will not attain liberation. As by offering one's work to the Lord, one attains this mercy. So this kind of work is described in the next verse, verse 46. By executing without attachment the regulated activities prescribed in the Vedas, offering the results of such work to the Supreme Lord, one attains the perfection of freedom from the bondage of material work. Material fruitive results offered in the revealed scriptures are not the actual goal of Vedic knowledge, but are meant for stimulating the interest of the performer. So here is the purpose of work, according to the Vedas, is to gradually become free from the bondage of work, offering the results to Krishna, to the Supreme Lord. So this is Naishkarmya. This is actually Karma Yoga. When you offer it to Krishna, it becomes Karma Yoga. So the word Naishkarmya is mentioned here, liberation. The end of the purport. Although the prescribed rituals of the Vedas may sometimes resemble material fruit of work, the activity is spiritualized because the result is offered to the Supreme. Candy-covered medicine and ordinary candy may appear or taste the same, but the candy-covered medicine has a therapeutic effect not found in ordinary candy. Similarly, the words Naishkarmya Labhate Sityam in this verse indicate a faithful follower of the Vedic injunctions will gradually be promoted to the highest perfection of life. Pure love of Godhead is stated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Prema Pumartha Mahan. So, in 47... is much more specific about that. One who desires to quickly cut the knot of false ego, which binds the spirit soul, should worship the Supreme Lord Keshava by the regulations found in Vedic literature such as the Tantras. So now the highest is being given in 47, that you worship the Lord Keshava. Bhagavad Gita, we see the difference between the those who practice Vikarma in Bhagavad Gita. Which verse? There is one verse, two verses together that describe the Vikarma and then the devotee, the non-devotee and the devotee, and how their work is completely different. Of course, it's higher than work. It's from the ninth chapter. There's two verses together. I was a little bit earlier. Mogasha, first with the Mogasha, Moka Karmano, Moka Gyana Vichit. Everything is frustrated for those who are in Vikarma. Mahakmanas tu Mamparta, Daivam Prakatim. So what's the difference? What makes it spiritual is that the devotees are taking shelter of Daivi Prakriti, different energy. Whereas the non-devotees are taking shelter of Maya, Mahamaya. And so that spiritualizes it. When you offer it to Krishna, then you're working under, and who is this Daivi Prakriti? According to Nectar of Devotion, it's Shrimati Radharani. So they work under, devotees work under the direction of Shrimati Radharani, and the non-devotees work under the direction of Durga, the prison warden. Okay. Now, in the comments from Bhaktisiddhanta, it talks about deity worship, and that's what we're going to hear about in the next few verses. And it says there's two kinds of deity worship. One is called kevala, or transcendental, and another kind is called karma misha, or mixed with fruitive activities. And the first kind, the transcendental kind, is what is being described in this verse 47. Transcendental deity worship, worshipping Keshava. So, by the regulations found in the Tantras. So, in the purport, paragraph 2 of 47, now that the path for those who are materialistic has been described in several verses, this verse describes the process for those who are vigya, or learned transcendentalists. Such learned transcendentalists are advised to follow the regulated worship described in such Vaishnava Tantras as Shri, Narada, Pancharatra, for pleasing the Supreme Lord directly. So here a whole other purpose. The other purpose of the other people is to please themselves. But now we're learning to please Krishna. At the end of the purport, it says, the Vedas are referred to by the term Nigama, and the elaborate explanation of the Nigamas is called Agama, or Tantra. So that's what's being mentioned here in this verse, the explanation of the Vedas, the Tantras, such as Sri Narada Pancharatra. When the transcendental living entity becomes perturbed by the obnoxious harassment of material bodily dualities, he becomes eager to hear from the Vedas about his transcendental situation. The word ashu in this verse indicates those who are eager to put a quick end to material existence and situate themselves in the eternal blissful life of perfect knowledge should directly worship Lord Krishna, bypassing the preliminary Vedic rituals described in the previous verse. So in order to get to this point of Bhagavatam, you would have to read so many Vedas to figure it out. You would never figure it out, actually. You would just be bewildered. So now we're being handed it to us very nicely. Verse 48, having obtained the mercy of a spiritual master who reveals to the disciple the injunctions of Vedic scriptures, the devotee should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the particular personal form of the Lord the devotee finds most attractive. So now we're being very specific. You worship the deity you're attracted to. End of the purport. Whatever exists in the visible material world is also meant to be engaged in the Lord's service, otherwise it has no value. If one artificially renounces material things useful in the service of the Supreme Lord, he loses his spiritual qualification of seeing everything as meant for Krishna's pleasure and will be forced to think of material objects as meant for his own sense enjoyment. In other words, material things should be accepted or rejected according to the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. So both purports are emphasizing to please the Lord. Otherwise, one will fall down from the standard of pure devotional service. As stated in this verse, labdhvanugraha acharyat, such discrimination can be learned when one receives the mercy of a bona fide spiritual master who reveals to the sincere disciple the practical application of Vedic knowledge. So here we have a comment from Bhaktisandarbha. Although in the opinion of Bhagavatam, the path of worshipping the deity as it is described in Pancharatras and other scriptures is not compulsory, and without engaging in deity worship, man may attain the final goal of life by engaging in even only one of the nine processes of devotional service, processes that begin with surrender. Nevertheless, in the opinion of they who follow the path of Narada Muni and other great sages, by accepting initiation from a bona fide spiritual master, one attains a relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's why it's important here. By the mercy of the spiritual master, you don't worship the deity without initiation, without the mercy of the spiritual master. So here it says, established through the feet of one's spiritual master, when one is thus initiated, the process of deity worship is compulsory. So according to Jiva Goswami, this verse is talking about initiation, becoming initiated, second initiation, and worshipping the deity. So these verses are for those who are second initiated. After cleansing oneself, verse 49, purifying the body by pranayama, bhuta shuti, and other processes, and marking the body with sacred tilak for protection, one should sit in front of the deity and worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we'll go to the purport. Pranayama is the authorized Vedic process for controlling the air within the body. Similarly, bhuta shuti is a process for purifying the body. The word shuchi means one should be internally and externally clean. Of course, Prabhupada has mentioned, we learnt in, I think it was third canto, pranayama and chanting Hare Krishna are the same. When you chant Hare Krishna, you do pranayama. Shuchi means one should perform activities only for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So three purports in a row, is the whole purpose is to please Krishna. Everything is for his pleasure. If somehow or other one can remember the Supreme Lord constantly by chanting and hearing his holy name, one will come to the pure stage of life as described in this Vedic mantra. Om pavita pavito va sarva vastam gatopiva yasmare pundarikaksham sabhaya pyantra shuchi. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has pointed out that although one may mark the body with sacred tilak, perform mudras and chant mantras, if one is thinking within his mind of material sense gratification, his worship of Lord Shri Hari is bogus. Therefore, we have Srila Prabhupada, who is very merciful to the fallen souls. Therefore, the word shuchi here indicates one should worship the Lord in a favorable frame of mind, considering the Lord to be sacred and oneself to be an insignificant servant of the Lord. Yes, the proper mood is important, and we should have that proper mood. Verse 50-51, the devotee should gather whatever ingredients for worshipping the deity are available, make ready the offerings, the ground, his mind, and the deity, sprinkle his sitting place with water for purification, and prepare the bathing water and other paraphernalia. The devotee should then place the deity in his proper place, both physically and within his own mind, concentrate his attention, and mark the deity's heart and other parts of the body with tilak. Then he should offer worship with the appropriate mantra. So paragraph 2, Lord's incarnation as Archavatar, deity form, is a special manifestation of the Lord's mercy toward the materialistic and neophyte devotees who are still under the influence of material designations. So let's hear about these neophyte devotees. They are unable to perceive the Lord in his eternal abode. Okay, well, I guess that includes a lot of us. We also cannot perceive the Lord in his eternal abode. So I guess we're neophytes. Therefore, the Lord descends as a deity form, manifesting the Prakash incarnation and even Swayam Prakash, or original form of the Lord. The Prakash incarnation exhibit various pastimes within this world, whereas Swayam Prakash, the Lord's original form, is the source of all avatars. So, fortunately for us, because we cannot see Krishna in Goloka, he has descended as Radhisham Sundar, Krishna Balaram, Gornitai. And that is his mercy towards us, mercy incarnation. 52-53, one should worship the deity along with each of the limbs of his transcendental body, his weapons such as Sudarshan Chakra, his other bodily features, and his personal associates. So tomorrow we will hear about Lord Chaitanya, his limbs, his weapons, his bodily features, and his personal associates. His weapons are not like the Sudarshan Chakra. They're quite different weapons Lord Chaitanya has. One should worship each of these transcendental aspects of the Lord by its own mantra and with offerings of water to wash the feet, scented water, water to wash the mouth, water for bathing, fine clothing and ornaments, fragrant oils, valuable necklaces, unbroken barleycorns, flower garlands, incense, and lamps. Having thus completed the worship in all its aspects in accordance with the prescribed regulations, one should then honor the deity of Lord Hari with prayers and offer obeisances to him by bowing down. The worshipper, this is verse 54, should become fully absorbed in meditating upon himself as an eternal servant of the Lord, should thus perfectly worship the deity, remembering the deity is also situated within his heart. Then he should take the remnants of the deity's paraphernalia, such as flower garlands, upon his head, and respectfully put the deity back in his own place, thus concluding the worship. 55. Thus a worshipper of the Supreme Lord should recognize that the personality of Godhead is all-pervading and should worship him through his presence in fire, the sun, water, and other elements, in the heart of the guest one receives in one's home, and also in one's own heart. In this way, the worshipper will very soon achieve liberation. So I have an excerpt here from Bhagavatam, 11th canto, where it talks about worshipping the Lord in sun, the fire, brahmanas, cows, vaishnavas, sky, wind, water, earth, individual soul, and all living entities. And it tells how to do it.
Which canto?
11, 43 through 45. This canto. So I'm already telling you about it, so you'll hear it twice, and then it'll be good news for you. I mean, you'll remember it. 11, 43 for 45. This is Krishna speaking to Uddhava. One should worship me within the sun by chanting selected Vedic mantras and by performing worship and offering obeisances. So we see a lot of people in India, they worship the sun, sunrise, actually. They go and they're praying to the sun god, sunrise, sunset. Those who chant Gayatri.
They offer water with rice.
They offer water. They worship the sun. This is recommended in Bhagavatam. We do that by chanting Gayatri. Sunrise, sunset, three sandhyas, sunrise, sunset, and noon. One may worship me within fire by offering oblations of ghee. One may worship me among the brahmanas by respectfully receiving them as guests, even when uninvited. I can be worshipped within the cows by offerings of grass and other suitable grains and paraphernalia for the pleasure and health of the cows. One may worship me within the Vaishnavas by offering loving friendship to them and honoring them in all respects. Through steady meditation, I'm worshipped within the inner space of the heart. Within the air, I can be worshipped by knowledge that prana, the life air, is the chief among elements. I'm worshipped within water by offerings of water itself. So we see in the Ganga, Jamuna, people are offering water to the water, along with other elements like flowers and tulsi leaves. And one may worship me within the earth by proper application of confidential seed mantras. One may worship me within the individual living entity by offering food and other enjoyable substances. And one may worship me within all living entities by seeing the super soul within all of them, thus maintaining equal vision. So that's how to practically apply this last verse of 11th canto. The Uddhava Gita will elaborate on all these verses of the Jayantas, yes?
I'm always intrigued by this worshipping Krishna in earth by Bija Mantras.
Bija Mantra, yeah. I don't know about that. Prabhupada didn't teach us that. How to worship the earth by Bija Mantras. Bija Mantras. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Yes, you know about that? Did you learn in...
I have another
question. Well, first answer his question, then you can ask her. You didn't learn that in Gopi Pranadana school.
What is the Bija Mantra?
Bija Mantra is a seed mantra.
What is the Bija Mantra?
Well, that we're not supposed to say. There's so many Bija Mantras in Gayatri.
So maybe
no, it's different. Actually, yes, you can find it, you know, like with for Hanuman is somewhere. Yeah, I've seen these beach mantras somewhere. No, I've seen it somewhere. I think I've seen it now. My memory is correct. Yes?
But there's a scripture of Jambudvipa, and there's one which is described that Lakshmi Devi is worshipped, and this Shrim, Shram, Shrum.
No. My memory is clicking. I think it's. I've seen it. I've seen the beach mantras for earth, water, fire. And that it might be in the Gayatri book of not Mahanidhi Swami.
No, the Panchayatra explains earth,
lung. Sachinandan Swami's book. I saw some chart somewhere. I have another book. I don't think it's in his book. It's a different book. From Daivi Shakti. It's a collection of nectar collection. In that book, there's all these charts that Dasarath Sutta made, and one of them, I think, is that the Bija mantras of all the elements.
Narada Pancharatra has it.
Narada Pancharatra.
Any yoga shastra on chakras, because it's connected to the chakra, it has the.
Yeah. Yeah, lucky we don't have to learn all those mantras. We got Hare Krishna.
There's one ritual when one establishes an asana before puja.
Could be.
And I don't remember if you play some bijas when you establish.
Yeah, because I never learned that. It was after my time. I was a pujari. So I haven't studied that.
We worship Krishna in earth.
Yeah, we worship. Well, we do punya. We chant Bhagavad Gita sloka, punya ganda prithivyam cha, and the original fragrance of the earth. We see Krishna in the earth. I am the original fragrance. And we learn from. Where is that? Ananda Vrindavan Champu. That when Krishna, when Yashoda drops Krishna's clothes on the earth, then they get the fragrance of Krishna. And that's the fragrance of the earth we smell. Still there from when Krishna was here. Okay, what is your question?
Yeah.
The visual of the worship of the individual self. Yes? By offering, the individual living entity. One may worship me within the individual, like different living entities, by offering food and other enjoyable substances. To them. Prasad. No, that is the other ones. Of course you understood yourself, but actually that means everyone else. No. One may worship me. Of course it means you too. I mean, you're included. You're included in the individual living entity. You are also an individual living entity. But you're actually, you're worshiping others. You are doing the puja. So that means you have to be worshiping somebody besides yourself. Yeah. We are not impersonalists. And you worship me with individual living entity. Worship me within all living entities. Yeah, so there's two there. It's interesting. It's good to check the Sanskrit. I don't have the 11th chapter here today.
Which one?
11:43-45. He's wondering about the individual living entity.
It says Bhogai Atmanam Atmani. Bhogai.
Bhogai Atmanam Atmani. And then what about the all living entities? What's the difference between that and all living entities? Chaitanya Sarvabhuteshu. Yeah, so individually you give them food and everything, and then as a whole, you just understand that Krishna is in their heart. You can't feed the masses, but one by one. Yes.
Well, it sounds like that bogus philosophy of feeding the Daridra Narayan.
Daridra Narayan. Yeah, fortunately we have Srimad Bhagavatam, and we understand to give Krishna. That's why you need Guru. Spiritual master will say, yes, but not that Daridra is Narayan. He said, in me. He said, I am within their heart, but they are not me. And that's how we have to understand it. Chintya Beta Beta Tattva. They don't understand that philosophy. Yeah, somebody had a question this side. I thought I saw a hand. Yeah.
Yes, sorry, I'm not sure.
He's a child. They were saying that they wanted him to understand that because we are Gyanis, we cannot answer that question. It's beyond the power of the Gyanis to know devotional service, because it's Bhagavad Dharma is the answer. So, Bhagavad Dharma. For Kumaras. Yeah, they were. Their position is they are the incarnation of Gyan, of Yoga, Gyan. What is it? The four things. Jnana, Yoga, Vidya, and the austerity, no? Tapa. Their incarnation of four qualities. Jnana, Vairagya, Tapa.
Jnana, Tapa, Vidya, and?
Vairagya, I would say.
Vairagya? No?
Yoga also. I can't remember. Yoga is one, Vairagya. Vidya and Jnana are the same. And Tapa. You have a miniature 11th canto there? We have a miniature Bhagavatam. I want one of those. You have to give me glasses to go with it. Okay, so yeah. Other questions? It must be really small. Okay, yes, Lishika? Karma, akarma. Okay, which verses are about vikarma, which are about karma, and nishkarma. So the first ones are, verse 44 is about vikarma and karma. What the people who do vikarma, they should do karma. And then 45 is about vikarma. 46, karma and nishkarma. Actually, nishkarma is there. It's 46 is nishkarma. That's mentioned there in the verse. And 47 is the highest nishkarma. And then the rest goes into details of 47. After 47, it just gives details how to practically do that. But 47 is the pure devotional service. Well, yes. You want to quickly cut the knot of false ego, you just worship the Lord. Worship Lord Krishna. Yeah. Anything else? Yeah, it's archana. This is the process to... Yes, because they're following the Vedic process, and then it's Karmakanda, Jnanakanda, Upasanakanda. So that is part of the Vedic also. This is the Vedic process, Upasana. Also, so it's in that line of reasoning that they can, okay, yes, I see in the Vedas I'm worshipping, so now how to do the actual worship properly by pleasing the Lord. So it follows, it's logical that this should be there as part of karma, this upasana kanda. Yeah, that's why it says in verse 47, if you want more, then you look at the tantras, Narada Pancharatra. This is the summary. This is the essence. Bhagavatam is not going to give you the whole book of Narada Pancharatra. It will actually, when we get to Uddhava Gita, it will be more elaborate. It will go into more detail. It will go into more detail about deity worship and, you know, Janmashtami, all these festivals and everything will be there in Uddhava Gita. How you should do festivals, Janmashtami, all the fasting and everything. It will be. Then now we're getting like seed. These Bhagavad Dharma verses. It's like a seed, and then it'll be expanded in Uddhava Gita. There'll be whole chapters on deity worship. Whole chapters. Now we're just getting like introduction, little introduction. Yes. Then that's you follow your guru, because every guru has a different, and so. Whatever your what your guru tells you, that you should do, because every guru will tell you something different, perhaps. So, if I say something here, then your guru may say something different. But yeah, the principle is that Prabhupada, if you are living in the temple, then that means you just have the temple deities. If you are living near the temple, also, then it's also you should have the temple deities as the main deity worship. And if you are living far away, then your deities can be the main deities. if you're living too far, to attend every day the temple.
And Maharaj,
whatever he says, whatever your guru says, that's good. Home worship is, there's books about it too. I'm sure if you go to the bookstall, you'll get a book on home worship. I think Bhakti Vikas Maharaj maybe wrote one, something. Anything else on this chapter, these verses? Okay, yeah.
Sankhya, Yoga, Tapa, and Vairagya.
So Sankhya means type of knowledge, Jnana Vidya. Sankhya, Yoga, Tapa, and Vairagya. Yeah, they are four incarnations. So that's why they said we cannot answer. We are not. Narada is bhakti. But of course they are devotees as well. But they were just giving an example. They were giving an example of. It's a type of gyan. It's under the category, the broad category of gyan. There's different types of gyan. Sankhya is one type. Okay. So we will stop here and we will meet at 12:30 after half an hour break. Yes, you have something?
I have another question. Karma Yoga.
Karma Yoga, yes. They are saying Karma Yoga and Naishkarmya is synonymous, is what there's these verses. This, when they say Naishkarmya, it means Karma Yoga. So it may have other meanings which you have heard, but in this context, Naishkarmya means Karma Yoga, worshipping the Supreme Lord, offering results to Him. So that's why you have to be careful with different terms. In different places, they're used different ways. And Prabhupada had his own way. He would say, Nishkam devotee. He never used the word Nishkam karma yoga. He just said the Nishkam devotee. It means he has no other desire except to please Krishna. So he had his own terminology when we were here. Okay. Glories to Srila Prabhupada.